Welcome to Car Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Welcome to the show, friends and neighbors. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am one of your hosts today, and people call me Ben Bolin because that is, in fact, my name.
And people also call me by my name, which is Kurt Guerin.
That's right. Kurt, you and I have had this topic circling around in our heads for a few weeks now, and it's something that longtime Car Stuff listeners may be familiar with. We know that cars are sold around the world, right? Mm-hmm. And in some countries, like here in the United States, we're lucky enough to have car manufacturing facilities here in our own country. So it's pretty easy to ship a car from a factory to a consumer here in the States. But how did these cars get all over the world? After all, cars exist in every country, but not every country has its own car company or car manufacturing ability.
That is right. Yeah.
So how do they get from point A to point B?
I would say by sea.
Right.
And that is not the letter C. That is by shipping.
Yes. Yes, sir. Every year, millions of cars are shipped from one place to the next via truck, rail, air even, and as you said, cargo ships. Cargo ships. Sorry, swing and a miss.
Yeah, I don't know.
That is the worst pun. I'm going to acknowledge it, but we're not going to speak of it again. Today, Kurt, you and I are focusing on the ships. And I don't know if I ever told you, but you know, it's been a longstanding goal of mine, dare I say a dream, to travel via cargo ship.
Really?
Yeah, it's a thing you can do. You just have to be flexible with your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You usually need to book several months in advance, but you can go across the Pacific, you can go across the world, and you can do round trips, or you can do a one-way slow boat to China kind of thing. You just have to be under, like, 77. So I think we've got time,
yeah.
Is what I'm saying. But if you and I did that, they wouldn't put us to work swabbing the deck or anything, but we would very much just be ancillary passengers because cargo ships are this enormous industry. They move billions of dollars worth of goods, and they ship anything from, you know, like a million Beanie Babies to just, like, imagine a random thing, fidget spinners. It doesn't matter. And every single day, cargo vessels are crisscrossing these oceans of ours, shipping automobiles, shipping cars. And they're specialized vehicles, these vessels that ship these cars. Some of them can hold up to, what, 8,000 vehicles?
Yeah, between 4,000, 8,500 vehicles, I believe. Yeah, they're enormous. They're like giant parking garages.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the levels can even raise and lower in height to accommodate taller and shorter vehicles. So they're flexible in that way as well.
Yeah.
So they're very, very cool vehicles. They're just giant parking lots, basically.
They're floating parking lots, mm-hmm. And they look weird. You could see some fascinating videos of loading and unloading the trucks, which we can explore a little bit. These ships move cars and trucks to the U.S. They go to different ports on the east and west coast, and then once they hit the coast here, they're unloaded and the cars are transported either to a dealer or to a individual person who has purchased a car from abroad or is having it shipped. And then it just gets on a truck or it gets on a rail and off to the races.
That's right. In fact, just down the road in Brunswick, Georgia, I believe it's the second busiest port. First would be Baltimore.
Oh, wow.
Brunswick apparently handles about 40 ships a month.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I wouldn't have even thought that because Brunswick isn't really, like Baltimore, yeah, sure.
I mean, sure.
Giant.
That makes sense. I would have thought Savannah.
Savannah handles some of the traffic, but Brunswick gets most of the ro-ro traffic.
Oh, okay. This is the first time we've used this term today. What is ro-ro?
It's a ship used to carry cars or actually just vehicles. Even semi-trucks or other heavy machinery. And RORO stands for roll-on, roll-off, which is the way that the vehicles get on the ship. So they're not lifted by crane.
Like, you're talking about Lolo. Because
right.
There's the Ro-Ro and the Lolo.
Yes.
I feel like a 9-year-old saying that, but those are accurate terms.
Mm-hmm.
Lolo is where you use a crane to load and unload cargo. And a Ro-Ro is cutting out the middleman of the crane. You're able to physically move the vehicle on its wheels into the vessel.
Yeah, they just drive them on.
What's weird about this is that we don't really think about the amazing journey a lot of these vehicles take before they end up in the dealership or double parked in front of your favorite grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Car carrier ships are these industrial workhorses. Some can haul up to 8,500 vehicles, which is the highest number I had found. And there was one particular case that really stood out to me because I think there's a good specific example that we can look at to get a snapshot of the industry overall. And that is a boat called the Andromeda Leader. Pretty cool name for a boat, right?
Definitely.
I feel
weird. Sounds like a spaceship or something.
It
though,
does, and it looks kind of like a spaceship. The scale is just enormous. It's huge. It has a cargo capacity of 21,443 tons. That makes it bigger than some of the largest cruise ships on Earth. This one specifically is carried 5,500 vehicles, which is right in that range you described earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's built to Panamax standards.
Yeah, the ship is 32 meters or 105 feet wide. Panamax is the dimensions of, or it's the requirements to go through the Panama Canal. And I believe that that is around about the largest that could fit through the Panama Canal, or at least the old standards. They did update these, in 2006. So it's, mm-hmm. it's a bit wider. I think a few of the locks are now a little wider, but still you want to fit through any of them.
Right.
I would imagine.
Can't go over Panamax.
Right.
And so for a while, that was a hard limit on even the biggest ships making that kind of route.
Mm-hmm.
The Andromeda Leader, despite sounding like a spaceship, is a cargo ship. It moves Toyota, Lexus, Scions, and so on across the Pacific, and it gets them to the U.S. So here's the thing. Some of us listening may be familiar with the former football player Joe Montana.
Mm-hmm.
The name is at least familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Montana, at least from what I can remember, was kind of well known for throwing ugly passes that get the job done. And the Andromeda Leader and these car carrier ships, they're kind of like a Joe Montana pass because they look ugly as sin.
Mm-hmm.
They're performance is not, you know, they're not going to win a beauty contest. The nuts and bolts of the ship and its propulsion are, I guess, impressive in the scale, but not as impressive as you might think, because this is a transport craft. It is only supposed to move cars without wrecking them or sinking itself in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see it on the water, it looks goofy because it looks like it's standing too far out from the water. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're very, very tall ships. They're like 9 or 10 stories tall.
Mm-hmm.
And they're giant boxes on the ocean. That's what they look like. I mean, very few windows. Some of them do carry passengers, like you alluded to earlier. But the ones that are built purely for rolling cargo, they are just giant boxes, purpose-built to get from point A to point B.
Yeah, only about 15% of the hull on the Andromeda Leader is actually submerged when it's in the water. And the captain, I thought you would find this funny, the captain describes the ship as a, quote, floating coconut.
Mm-hmm.
It sails at 17 to 19 knots, and its journey takes it 28 days. It leaves from a port near Nagoya, Japan, where there's an awesome Toyota museum, to Jacksonville, Florida. And then these cars are unloaded in Jacksonville. They're generally meant for the Southeast if they're unloaded there. And then it goes to Newark, where it unloads some stuff. And then on its return leg, as it's sailing back home, it stops in Puerto Rico to drop off a few more cars. And then it goes to Japan empty. And I would assume it travels a little bit faster without all that weight. So that's an example of a specific vehicle. But how does the rubber hit the road here? How do they get these cars into these vessels. There's a science to it, arguably also an art. We'll answer that after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. And as you can imagine, maximizing the number of cars a ship can carry while minimizing the damage to those cars can be complex, which is why they switched to a vessel that you can roll the cars on and off of. Mm-hmm. Until the 1960s, they were generally using cranes to transfer cars off one or two at a time. The introduction of car carrier ships changed that. Before that, there were amphibious vehicles and ships that would transport vehicles to, you know, shorelines and various other places.
Yeah.
And ramps would load the vehicles on and off of land. So roll-offs kind of started long before they were introduced in kind of like a commercial sense. So the ramps are also incorporated on the ships of today, on the large ro-ro ships. They have a one giant ramp. It's usually towards the back of the ship. The stern, I guess, is what they would call that. And cars are driven on one by one. Very quickly, though, and very efficiently. If you've ever seen this done, it's a ballet of sorts.
Yeah, it's fascinating, especially because it feels like it's like watching a circus performance or watching those stunts where motorcycles drive in a sphere. You know what I'm talking about? Because I keep
it's a game of inches.
Yeah, exactly. I keep expecting something to wreck. You know what I mean?
Even the semis, when they load them on, they're driving them up the ramps that are just wide enough to fit these vehicles. So there's very little margin of error. They need about 10 centimeters or about 4 inches of overhead clearance. So the height determines which deck they are parked on. Like I said before, some of the decks can lower and raise.
And on the Andromeda specifically, the shortest deck is too short for a SUV, certain SUVs. But like you said, two of those decks on the Andromeda specifically can be raised to a pretty big height. It's like 16 feet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and spacing between the cars is just as critical. They allow for about 30 centimeters or about a foot that separate the front and rear bumpers of the car. There is a gap of some 6 inches from side to side. If you've ever seen some of the catastrophes where the cars have either they were not secured correct or they had come loose during shipment, as you can imagine, complete disaster for everything around them. So I guess parking them close to each other limits that damage a little bit. If one car comes loose, there's not a lot of room for it to travel, but those types of things are rare, but they do happen. So that said, the mirrors are folded in to make for more room to park.
And according to a guy named Bill Barrett, a national logistics manager for Toyota, consistent spacing is the key here. He says you don't want scratches on bumpers, you don't want dents, scrape-ups, and so on. So parking them this closely doesn't do the job by itself. They also lash the vehicles down. And at least in the case of the Andromeda, they specifically use a minimum of 4 nylon straps that are looped through these removable hooks at the bumpers or on the frame. And of course, large vehicles need more straps. And those parked perpendicular to the keel needs more straps. And the clasp on the other end of the straps are attached to holes or rings on the floor. And these things are super taut. They want the cars to barely be able to budge at all. Mm-hmm. Because if even one comes loose when they're parked that closely, it can kind of minimize damage to an area, depending on how rough the seas are or how bad the bumps are. But on the other hand, if the boat takes a big enough knock and there's a loose car, that thing could careen everywhere. It could be like a ricochet effect.
And if enough cars get dislodged, obviously cargo shifting in a boat like that is not a good thing. So if massive amounts of these things are not secured properly, it could spell disaster for the ship itself.
When you were a kid, did you ever do those relay things where you have to like run with an egg and a spoon, but you can't drop the egg? This is, to me, this is like that if every moment that you ran with the spoon was worth millions of dollars.
Yeah.
If you drop the egg, people could die. There are lives on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads us to something else that we wanted to hit when we talk about the amazing journey that your cars take across the world to meet you. And that is that this kind of endeavor, and this kind of trip, not only is it complicated, not only is there a lot on the line, but it can also be dangerous. We'll tell you why after a word from our sponsor. And we are back. Kurt, this is something you and I talked about a little bit off air, and I think maybe we alluded to it in the episode already, but there have been a lot of accidents with roll-on and roll-off vessels.
There have been, yeah.
You see, it turns out that there are quite a few ro-ro vessels that have taken on water and capsized or actually sank due to one problem or another. Problems with the loading doors, pretty common. Problems with vehicle decks and other things that could happen to any vessel.
Yeah, I would imagine that when one of these begins to take on water, it fills those giant cavities fairly quickly, and I guess that's why they're so disastrous when and if they do have issues where they start to leak.
Probably one of the worst disasters in terms of human life was the MS Estonia in 1994.
And of course, some of these are passenger ships as well.
Yes.
Because I would imagine that a lot of the pure car only or vehicle only ro-ros wouldn't have too many people on them.
That's true. You want to minimize the amount of people you need on board. But yeah, the Estonia was a ro-ro, but it was a ferry. So it had a lot of passengers on it. And in the sinking of the Estonia in 1994, 852 people lost their lives. You can see list of different ro-ro accidents. Now, not all of these are huge disasters, but they do continue to happen. For instance, consider the story of the MV Golden Bay, which capsized on September 9th, 2019. And that's a car carrier through and through. Here's how things went down. It was at the Port of Brunswick Harbor after it unberthed and was heading toward the Port of Baltimore. It had some serious listing and they immediately closed the port. The United States Coast Guard sent a rescue mission to find four of the 23 crew members that went missing. They were all eventually rescued. They appeared to be in okay health. And as far as they could guess, the incident was probably caused by a sudden loss of stability. Maybe they had stowed the cargo incorrectly, or maybe the water ballast was miscalculated. They were carrying Kia and Hyundai cars that were meant to be delivered in the Middle East. A Hyundai executive said, well, there was some kind of internal fire and it couldn't be controlled, then it capsized. So people still weren't completely in agreement on what happened. Mm. And can you imagine if we were loading those cars ourselves? We definitely wouldn't want people to say something was wrong with the way it was stacked in, you know?
For sure. And although there were no lives lost in this accident, obviously there's an environmental impact to the general or to the surrounding area where the accident happens, as well as damage to the cargo. You know, all those cars.
And they have a lot of redundant safety measures in place. It's just that you can't plan for everything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the weird thing is that these seagoing pure car carriers, ro-ro car ferries, have a reputation on the seas for being what's called high-risk design. They're considered notoriously tough to keep stable. And they've actually been referred to before as roll-on rollovers.
Clever.
Yeah, kind of like when Jeep gets a hard time, you know? And we know that any improperly secured loading door can cause the ship to start to take on water and sink. That happened in 87 with the Herald of Free Enterprise. It can also, this is so weird, but water sloshing on the deck can make something called the free surface effect. And this makes the ship unstable and it makes it capsize. Hmm. Free surface water on a deck was the likely cause of the 1968 capsizing of the TEV Waheen. But you might ask, why would people do this if it were so risky, right?
The sheer volume that you can ship in this manner would justify the risk involved. Really, how else are you going to get a massive amount of vehicles from Japan to the United States, or from the United States to other countries around the world. This just seems like it's the most cost-effective and safest option, even with the accidents that can happen.
Yeah, and people are still working on and refining the Ro-Ro idea. There are a couple different variations of Ro-Ro that you may have heard of. One is the LMSR, large medium speed roll on, roll off, which refers to some military craft. And these are the things that are purposely built to carry, you know, armored vehicles, mm-hmm. and other military cargo. Then there's the Conro. The Conro is a hybrid of the Ro-Ro and a container ship. Conro ships are pretty cool because they can carry a, you guessed it, combination of containers along with heavy equipment, oversized cargo, and cars.
Plenty of cars are shipped in containers as well. That's
exactly.
A very common way for individuals to ship cars.
We didn't even talk about that. Yeah, lay it on me.
But yeah, usually when you would want to ship a car overseas, most people probably think of enlisting the services of a company that would use just a giant shipping container to haul the car in and put it on just your standard container ship. And normally they can get one or two vehicles, depending on the size of the car, into these containers. They build wooden ramps and whatnot to elevate one car over the other if the size is right.
Yeah.
But it's a fairly safe, tried and true way to ship a car. It's just a little bit more invasive. There's a little bit, if you're concerned about your vehicle getting scratched, because there's a lot of handling when you're shipping in a cargo container.
Yeah.
It's a lot less, if you're rolling the car on and off the ship, a lot less can happen to the car that way. When you ship in a container, if they're going to stack the cars, they would have to go around your car and build a wooden structure around your car to elevate the other car above it. So obviously things can happen there. But it's a pretty neat option to explore, though, if you're looking to ship your car.
And you can find plenty of people and outfits online that have pretty good reps that will give you a quote. I suggest shopping around if you're shipping a car.
Read the reviews,
of course. Always read the reviews. And then if you're able to see what kind of shipping vessel they're going to use, let me know if they've got some extra seats. Maybe this will be the time I can ride along with your car across the high seas. So this concludes today's episode, but not our show. Have you ever worked on a cargo ship? Have you ever shipped a car across the planet? If so, let us know. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where we are
CarStuffHSW on Facebook and Twitter. Mm-hmm. And CarStuffShow.com is where you can find us on the World Wide Web.
With every single episode that we have ever done, Kurt, Scott, and I just going back... Oh, gosh, going back further than I would like to admit. As always, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We look forward to hearing from you. Tune in for our next episode.
Thanks, everyone.
Car Stuff is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.